always knew I was doing the right thing. Because you have a steadiness about you. And I believe in you. But it comes soon. And you must be smarter than your enemy.
What are you trying to say?
Americans, they're very smart, but sometimes they can be incredibly stupid. They spend all this money and time and energy on the so-called war on terror. They put satellites up in space. They can ram a smart bomb up a camel's ass from a situation room 5,000 miles away. But every time the U.S. kills an Al-Qaeda leader, what happens? There's a new one before the body's cold. You do it a million times. They never get it because the real solution always eludes them.
What is?
Do nothing.
Nothing.
Nada. If you want to shut down a fundamentally flawed system, all you gotta do is step out of its way, and it'll shut itself down. Nature has a way of correcting itself.
And you better believe it, boys and girls. Nature will take care of itself. Ha, ha, ha. You can't outsmart Mother Nature. Hey, it's Thursday. Yeah, Thursday. May the 26th, 2016. And it's a beautiful day out here today. Going to get up in the 80s or 86 or something, but we got some rain headed our way, so it's going to be a little humid around here. Yeah.
From monstrous giants. He was the warrior who protects his people from monstrous giants. He was the idol of Vikings and barbarians in the darkest age ever known to man. But few know the reality behind his myth. He battled the ancient world's most colossal sea monster. And he was the last hope for Europe's pagans as they defied the armies of Christendom. Fact and fiction collide in the myth of the mighty Thor. Two arch enemies battle to the death. Thor, the thunder god, against a staggering beast. A giant snake who strikes with lethal force. It is man versus monster. Thor unleashes his deadliest weapon, lightning from his magic hammer, as thunder rocks heaven and earth. The myth of Thor is filled with these epic showdowns, heroic battles against creatures who threaten mankind.
Thor is the champion of the gods. He's the great fighter who can be brought out when something is really bad. You don't go to Thor for wisdom. Go to Thor because he's going to protect you against the evil monsters.
Tales of Thor's adventures provided escape from one of the bleakest periods in human history, the Dark Ages of the first millennium AD. It was a time when the Norse world, stretching from the British Isles to the Baltic Sea, was in turmoil.
It's an agricultural society where people were farming and surviving kind of at the very edge of how it was possible to survive because it was cold. It was the northern part of Europe. It wasn't around the Mediterranean where it was much easier to grow things. And it tended to be, from everything we can tell, quite violent.
War, famine, and death were daily facts of life on the desolate northern fringes of Europe. But the myth of Thor brought a sense of order to the chaos.
It was a religion of the countryside. Paganism actually is a Latin word that describes that, what the country people believe in. And paganism is not really well organized either. It's not like the Greek pantheon in the sense that it's very well organized and everybody knows whose responsibilities and who's more important than whom. It's very different.
The view of human life in that mythology was a fairly dark, a fairly stern one.
Human beings didn't look forward to the kind of salvation in heaven at the end of time that's promised in the Christian stories. They had a kind of a darker, a more sorrowful view of life. People have to show great courage and hardiness in the face of enormous obstacles.
For inspiration, the people looked to Thor. Warrior.
Well, they had a big flying saucer get together up in near Portland, Oregon, I guess a couple of weeks ago. So they was talking to this woman, and she saw a UFO back in 78 when she was living in Nevada. Something she spotted in the sky that was so amazing, she said, she had to pull her car over to the side of the road. That's one reason Woods, who now lives in Aden, California, attended the country's second largest UFO festival earlier this month. Another, she wanted to enter her dachshund dog, a good sport named Skeeter, wrapped in silver duct tape and green cellophane in the Alien Pet Costume Contest at the 17th Annual McManean's Hotel Oregon UFO Festival. Wow. There was something for everybody, true believers, fun seekers, and those between at the festival May 12th to 15th outside of Portland, where another few thousand wackos live. Portland. Just as there's something for everyone who's ever looked up into the skies and wondered about something bigger than humankind. Wow. Angels, demons, aliens, it's all the same to Clyde Lewis. Speaking in an episode of his Portland-based paranormal podcast, Ground Zero, that was broadcast from the McManus UFO Festival. Quote, we come from spirituality to the idea of the space age. And now coming together, we come to the realization that all people on this planet have an idea that something is out there watching us. Whether it's God, an angel, a demon, or even an alien, Lewis said, it's all extraterrestrial. Christopher D. Bodden, associate professor of sociology at Baylor University, agrees. The difference between the belief in the paranormal, such as UFOs, ghosts, or Bigfoot, and the belief in a religion is not that great. Both require faith, he said. Quote, people view paranormal differently from religion, but to me it's the same type of phenomenon, unquote, he added. It's belief in things that cannot be proven. That's the currency of religion, unquote. And that's very true. Faith, everybody keeps talking about. Faith without evidence. Faith is without evidence. And that's what most people who occupy the churches and all that kind of stuff, they have all kinds of faith in nothing. I find that interesting. So I guess you could say that having a belief in flying saucers is just as valuable or just as valid as believing the baby Jesus who didn't exist. I have a friend over in Ohio that I've known for a long, long time, and he runs a whole operation based on all kinds of these fringe ideas. And, of course, he believes in flying saucers. He's written books about it and everything else. But where's the proof? Like the woman, old lady used to say, where's the beef? Not one flying saucer that I know of has landed, except they say out there at, Arizona or Nevada or Texas or something, that one came down. They're still arguing over that, though. It's sort of like believing everybody's equal. Yeah, I heard some black guy on the radio yesterday talking, oh, yeah, we're all equal. We're all equal. Yeah, right. Those who are marginally religious tend to be the most interested in the paranormal. That's interesting, Butter said. Many very religious people don't doubt the paranormal. but ascribe a different meaning to it, believing what appears to be an alien actually is a demon, for example. Wow. People who aren't interested in religion tend not to be interested in the paranormal either. Well, I don't think that's true. I'm interested in it. I'm not interested in regular religion, that's for sure, but I'm interested in the paranormal. But I like to deal in facts, evidence, and it's just a theory until you have the evidence. People who aren't interested in religion, oh, the difference between the two beliefs, cultural acceptance, he said, quote, the majority of people in this country profess to be Christian of some sort, unquote, he said. Quote, so Christian groups, you might call them the accepted version of the paranormal or the accepted version of the supernatural, unquote. Well, I guess you could do that, as long as you put a label on it, unproven. The Menendez Hotel, Oregon, began hosting the UFO festival after historian Tim Hill stumbled across the famous 1950 UFO photos taken by Paul and Evelyn Trent on their farm outside McMinnville. Hills thought that the first event might attract 25 people. The crowd overflowed the room into the hotel's restaurant hallway and into the sidewalk, he said. And 17 years later, the event brings 7,000 people to 10,000 people to downtown McMinnville, a city of 33,000 from as far as Florida. Well, that's a good thing because it puts money into the community. The businessmen make some money there, and the restaurants make some money, and even if it's all a bunch of shit, somebody's making some money. I remember when I was a kid about, I guess it was about 50 miles from here, there's a little lake, and somebody said they spotted a giant turtle. And this turtle was supposed to be bigger than a big dining room table. And so everybody started flocking to this lake, and they even built a campground there called Buck Lake Ranch. And people came from every year around looking for that turtle, like Loch Ness Monster. No one ever actually saw this turtle. But I saw Johnny Cash there. I went there, and he was coming up to Buck Lake Ranch in his big black Cadillac convertible. And he was all decked out in the black uniform. He was one of the top country singers in the 50s. He had a big house up in Beverly Hills with a big swimming pool shaped like a guitar. And it just happened that we pulled our car in. We were driving a 39 Chevy, Mom and Dad and I. And I was about 10 years old, I guess, and got out of the car, and I looked at this car next to us, this big black Cadillac convertible had pearl in the dash, all inlaid pearl, had twin 45s in the console, and all of a sudden I looked up, and it was a big, tall guy in a black suit and a big black cowboy hat. And I thought I had seen the manifestation of God, probably as close as I'll ever see. And that wasn't Johnny Cash. What am I talking about? It wasn't Johnny Cash. It was Webb Pierce. And back in his day, he was bigger than Johnny Cash. So anyhow, that's my story for the day. My little roundabout there, looking for the big turtle, and instead I found Webb Pierce. He was the first artist that sang I'm in the Jailhouse Now. You remember that one? I'm in the jailhouse now. Johnny Cash sang it too. Well, this year at that festival, for the first time, the festival speakers focused on a single sighting, that Phoenix Lights, a mass sighting of five orbs in a V-shape that were reported moving over Phoenix on March 13, 1997. Well, I tend to believe in that because so many people saw it. Longtime director of the National UFO Reporting Center, David Davenport, called the sighting probably the most dramatic event in history of modern ufology because of the number of witnesses, the size of the craft they reported, and the interest that the military apparently took in it. just to show you how much everything is secret to the government. They don't want you stupid peasants to know anything. Something that big flying around, they obviously the government knows about it. They could not hardly not know about it. But you're stupid peasants, and you don't need to know that. Well, anyhow, I'll just wait and see out here in the country for waiting on one of those flying saucers to land out here. Guy come down, probably guy get out and come down the ladder. And I'll say, "Hi, you there." And he'll say, "Morning, morning," and probably zap me. Well, I got great news. The InterVarsity Culture Christian Fellowship, I guess they call it. Tom Lynn recently was named the first non-white president of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship with a national ministry of 40,200 university students. That's wonderful. Isn't that wonderful? That excites me. Sounds to me like he's either Chinese or he's Vietnamese. The Mongols, otherwise known as Indians, are pissed off and they protested a plan to auction off sacred objects over in France. Those frogs want to get some of that stuff. Items for sale include ceremonial objects so sacred to the Hopi Mongols that members of the tribe object to having them even described. Wow. Tickles me when everybody calls them Native Americans. Well, they're not Native Americans. They're simply of the Mongol race that came up across the Aleutian Islands back in the day and came on down here to America. And as far as I'm concerned, in the struggle for land, whoever is the strongest and the smartest gets it. And so we got it, and now we're giving it away. Quote, "Over the years, we've searched high and low for objects that are part of our Mongol community," Marshall said. Quote, "When we create ceremonial objects, we're in prayer. We're breathing life into the object. And so these objects are not just mere objects in some fancy collection. These objects are living beings to us. These objects are part of our family. These objects have a sacred purpose in our community. An object from the Hupa tribe set to be auctioned in France on Monday. The auction house estimates it's worth thousands of euros." Well, there you go. Find some of that Hopi stuff and you can make some money. It says here an influential Thai from Thailand Buddhist monk is too ill to face graft charges, say the devotees. A standoff in Thailand between investigators and a powerful Buddhist sect intensified after its influential abbot failed to appear at the police station to be charged. He's on the run, that boy. Well, the U.S. Justice Department announced today it's charging Dylan Roof for the murder of 9 Negroes, Untouchables, at a historic AME church in Charleston, South Carolina. If convicted, Roof would receive the death penalty for hate crime, obstruction of religion, and firearms offenses. I don't think there's been hardly anybody given the death penalty, federal death penalty, but you gotta be sure they're going to do it to him. But what does it mean to commit a hate crime or obstruction of religion? The term hate crime is somewhat of a misnomer. It sure as hell is. Many crimes are driven by hate. A better term is a bias crime. The distinguishing feature of a hate crime or bias crime is that the act is based on the perpetrator's bias against race, religion, or other group. A hate crime deprives someone of their life, liberty, or property based on who they are, and it's often has been the intent of intimidating others who look and act or believe like the victim. Here's a few pieces of evidence that might justify a hate crime. The location is a church of important historical significance. Oh, shit. In the black community in Charleston. It's not significant to me and probably millions of other people. It's just a building. But maybe that is where God lives. The victims were shot while participating in an activity related to their race, religion, and cultish activity. All the victims were black. The shooter is white. According to reports, Dylan Roof had a Facebook picture in which he is wearing a coat with a flag of apartheid-era South Africa. Another photo shows Roof with a car with a Confederate States of America license plate. Boy! Roof reportedly also used language that showed he was shooting the victims because of their race. I think he probably was shooting them because of what their race was doing to the white race. Think about that. Think of the damage the black race has done to us, the white race. According to reports, Roof said, "You rape our women," which is true, "and you're taking over our country," which is, well, not exactly true, but they are becoming a pain in the ass. "And you have to go." Well, I agree, they should go. There is a public perception that the crime was aimed at victims based on their race. Well, what does the public know? They don't know shit. The federal government also charged Roof with obstruction of religion. Wow, that's a new one. Huh. Wonder how that would work with the creativity people. They should be able to use that. The obstruction of religion statute is less known than the hate crime violation. In response to church burnings in the early 1990s, Congress made it a federal crime to either damage or destroy a house of worship, or to use force to obstruct someone's exercise of religion. Okay. Most of those churches that were burnt during the 90s were burnt by blacks to collect the insurance. Didn't anybody ever check that out? I did. The hate crime charges will likely focus on the victim's race. No shit. The location and circumstances of the shooting also make it an obstruction of religion. They're obstructing religion. The victims were killed in their church at the close of a prayer service. The victims included leaders of the church as well. Because people died during the obstruction of religion, Roof may receive the death penalty. Oh, they're going to want that, yeah. Roof is not charged with terrorism. In our everyday language, the difference between a hate crime and terrorism is one degree, not kind. The murder of 9 people seems too big to label it as a crime. It's terrorism. Legally, however, hate crimes and terrorism differ in their intent. There can be small acts of terrorism and large, heinous acts that are hate crimes. See how complicated all this Jewish bullshit's getting? We often use terrorism to describe horrendous acts of violence that are committed on a larger scale than other crimes, but this isn't the legal definition. Well, it is when the United States government uses hate crimes. The United States government has been the most hateful government in history, probably. Some people might argue with that, but the United States government and the military-industrial complex have been responsible for the murder of millions and millions. I mean, look at Vietnam. There were millions killed there. Millions are being killed in the Middle East. That's terrorism. They call it national defense. That's what Roof should plead. For national defense, those Negroes were screwing the nation up. So they had to go. Terrorism is a political crime against the government or the population, but never by the government. The Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, defines terrorism as the unlawful use of force or violence against persons or property to intimidate or coerce a government, the civilian population, or any segment thereof in furtherance of political and social objectives. Well, I say you need to add violence by government. It's got to be in there. What do they say, intimidate or coerce a government? Bullshit. It's the government that does the coercion all the time. You know that. I know that. Saying that shooting is not an act of terrorism does not diminish the tragedy. 9 untouchables were murdered. The federal charges mean that in addition to murder, Rufus charged with to attack the civil rights and freedom of religion of his victims and others too. Boy. If convicted, Roof could receive life in prison or the death penalty as punishment. I think if I was Roof, I'd choose the death penalty, just like McVeigh. Don't give him the pleasure of torturing you for 50 years. No way. Well, Ice Cube, you know Ice Cube, that big black guy, you know, that big untouchable. He's pissed off at Hillary. Yeah. In light of the upcoming presidential elections, black peoples don't feel so enthusiastic about Hillary Clinton, who now is portrayed as an outspoken racist more than a politician willing to stand up for racial justice. Unless black voters want to suffer the consequences of Mrs. Clinton's questionable politics, they should think twice before casting their ballots for this candidate. In the recent interview with Bloomberg, rapper and filmmaker Ice Cube said Hillary Clinton is waging war against black people. He believes that the racist comments made by Mrs. Clinton during her speeches in 1996 resulted in an increased police brutality against blacks. Focusing on Hillary's racist comments made during the speech she gave in 96, Ice Cube doubts that Clinton might be serious about launching fighting against racism and inequality. Quote, to call our citizens super predators is pretty harsh and pretty big indictment. It's really not solving the problem. It's just making it worse. Now that the authorities feel like they're justified in how they treat these so-called super predators, said Ice Cube. Clinton is playing some cynical politics while making racist comments back in 1996. She's seeking our black support now in 2016. However, she did a little to gain the trust of the black population of America. Hillary Clinton is a candidate with a decades-long record of blatant lies. Well, I guess Ice-T is going to vote for Donald. Referring to Clinton's private email story, Sanders exclaimed, the American people are sick and tired of hearing about your damn emails. Let's talk about the real issues facing America. He's the one who really cares about black people and their needs. There you go. So Ice-T is all pissed off at Hillary. And the latest news is that Hillary Clinton has adopted the whole black race. Yeah, they had a formal ceremony in Washington yesterday. That's the news from Black Lives Matter, at least a little bit. Well, the body of a 38-year-old Atlanta resident, color him black, was discovered in the territory of the forest not far from Richmond Road and Park East Drive in Beechwood, Ohio. The black man, whose identity is still kept in secret, is said to have been staying in a nearby hotel. The corpse was found at about 8 p.m. on Friday by an occasional passer who decided to notify the authorities after anguishing about it for quite a while. Regardless, the fact that the circumstances of the incident remain unclear, and the position of the body immediately brings about gruesome thoughts about lynching and the Ku Klux Klan. No investigation has ever been launched. Beechwood authorities pretend not to see the obvious or just not to want to waste their precious effort digging for possible motives and suspects. Just because the victim is black, The assumed verdict is suicide, but we bet it would be a different and more serious case if there was a white guy on that tree. I wonder. Well, here's a sort of a sneaky peeky deal. Let's play this for you. You know, this Alec deal. If you don't know about Alec, you better find out about it, because they're writing most of the bills that go to the congressman, who just rubber stamped them and put them in the mill. Here we go.
We can't show you what's behind this closed door. A place where legislators and corporate lobbyists have an equal vote. A place they don't want you to see.
You need to be credentialed at registration.
We are credentialed. We are Georgia. We're Georgia Media. Are there legislators in there? Are there legislators in there? We are Georgia credentialed media.
Over here. Please step over here.
What? There's Georgia legislators here. Are laws being made in there?
This isn't the state capitol. It's a resort hotel in Savannah where lawmakers are wined and dined as members of the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC.
What is ALEC?
It's really a corporate bill mill. I mean, they're cranking out legislation, putting it in the hands of legislators who go back and file it.
Georgia Senator Nan Orrick would know. She was once an ALEC member.
What happens in these back rooms?
And their votes taken that have the corporate folks at the same table voting with the legislators on what bills to pick. And that at its core just screams out inappropriate.
You're telling me that in these rooms, a corporation has an equal vote with a legislator on a piece of legislation?
They absolutely vote, and the truth be told, they write the bills.
ALEC bills come complete with blanks where legislators need only fill in their state name, like the Asbestos Claims Priorities Act. This Georgia law that now prevents many asbestos victims from suing corporations matches the ALEC bill clause after clause, often word for word. The final vote was taken here at the Georgia Capitol, but the bill was first approved here. Inside a Las Vegas casino at a closed-door ALEC meeting. Records show the three Georgia senators who sponsored the bill received more than $22,000 in ALEC scholarships to attend resort meetings the year before, during, and after the asbestos law was passed.
This is money from corporations to legislators, but it's being filtered through ALEC, and they get a tax write-off?
Well, ALEC is a 501c3 organization, charitable educational purposes.
That's right. ALEC is an educational charity. The signature of Georgia's Speaker of the House, David Ralston, appears on this 2013 ALEC fundraising letter. He writes, "Your support of the scholarship fund is critical, enabling Georgia legislators to attend the annual meetings. Donations are 100% tax deductible and fund education efforts for legislators." Who's doing the educating? Inside that closed-door committee room in Savannah we couldn't show you, we saw the lobbyist for the cell phone industry seated across from Georgia State Rep Ben Harbin right before we were pulled out.
Here we're credentialed to observe legislators here in Georgia, wherever they meet, to discuss laws. He's calling for backup.
ALEC staffers had four off-duty sheriff's deputies standing by while we talked with the group's director of communications.
Can we do an interview with you?
Actually, no.
Why not?
If you'd please turn the camera on.
No, we can't turn the camera off. That's one thing we don't do.
Okay. Well, then I'd like to have you escorted out of the building, please.
Okay. I'm a guest of this hotel. I'm actually staying here at this hotel.
You are staying at this
hotel. Yes. Hotel. So here's the question is, if Georgia legislators are meeting here, we're credentialed right here to see Georgia legislators making laws. Are they discussing things that could become law here?
Georgia legislators are here participating in discussions where they're learning from legislators from others.
So why can't the people who elected them see the process?
This is a private meeting.
A private meeting paid for by whom?
By our members and donors.
Our lobbyists, correct?
No.
Are you here for this conference, too?
Are you really?
We met two lobbyists and a state representative from New England in the hotel bar the night before and recorded our conversation.
Do you have to pay your own way?
Well, on a trip like this, that's where you would come in, man. On a trip like this, I'm the state chair of Alabama.
Yeah.
And I look for financial support,
right.
Lobbyists, or people like, to send us like a couple $1,000 every so often. That gives me money to help those folks with. Now, the other hand,
and we pay more fee here, so it helps support them.
And you do.
I see. So the lobbyist fees to come to the event actually help subsidize the legislator coming here.
Are lobbyists, correct? No. They're not lobbyists? The ones that we recorded in the bar last night aren't lobbyists who are here members?
He signals to the sheriff's deputies.
All right, I'm a guest of the hotel,
not
sir.
Not for long.
I'm here, okay. But paying guest of this hotel, sir.
We'll take care of that.
Okay. Escort you up to your room and get your things.
Did we violate some law or something? I mean, are we violating a law here? Don't say nothing. One of the Georgia senators who sponsored that asbestos bill, Renee Unterman, told the 11 Alive investigators she later dropped out of ALEC, calling it a group of angry white men controlled by industry, not legislators. Major corporations like Atlanta-based Coca-Cola have also dropped out of ALEC.
Wow, eye-opening to say the least. Do lawmakers have to report payments for travel to these kinds of resort meetings?
You would think, Brenda, but in Georgia, the answer is no. We filed half a dozen open records requests with Georgia legislators, including the Speaker of the House asking for receipts and reimbursements to ALEC events. Well, today, we received this letter from their lawyer. Your request is denied. Quote, the General Assembly is not subject to the Georgia Open Records Law. Huh. In other words, lawmakers specifically exempted themselves from a law they passed to make Georgia government more transparent.
It's a good thing more you made it out there. The guards were standing for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, wow. This is just baffling.
We'll stay on
here. And we wouldn't know it had it not been for this report.
No.
All right, Brendan, thank you.
Mind blowing. Thank you.
And you wonder why you have corruption in Washington, and people try to write it off that it's just a corruption in Washington, and these guys that run for state office will tell you, I want to go to Washington, I want to go to Washington to get rid of the corruption. They take the corruption with them. They're already corrupt. The state representatives and state senators are almost all corrupt already before they even run for office to go to higher office to go to Washington. It's enough to gag a maggot, boys. Now it's time for revolution. It's way past time. You want to know why American airports are so screwed up and the TSA is so screwed up? Well, of course, one reason they hire massive numbers of non-white illiterates, foreigners and so forth, and of course, your own low IQ blacks all over the place in TSA. Now they've hired 800 more. Well, 800 more stupid people just makes it a bigger stupid situation. Now, if you want to run it right, you run it like the Israelis. Now, I had the experience of going through the Israeli airports in Tel Aviv. And these people, they operate like National Socialists of 1930s Germany. Now, they don't... They're more polite than probably they would have been in 1930s National Socialist Germany, but they get the job done, and they get it done well. And it's interesting how so many of these Ashkenazim European-type Jews operate closely like the Germans did under National Socialism, and that's why they're effective. That's why they're effective. They don't want to admit it, but... that's where they got it. So you can be pretty safe flying into Tel Aviv or flying out. And you can feel pretty safe on the airplane, too. So sorry, all you anti-Semites. That's the truth. Israel, Ashkenazim, European-type Jews imported a whole lot of that National Socialist 30s Germany. Well, let's sneak a little tidbits out of Israel there. Benjamin Netanyahu doesn't watch a lot of television. But if there's one show that Israel's prime minister does try to catch, it's Friday evening news broadcast on Channel 2, the country's most popular outlet. Netanyahu believes that this program, in which a group of five or six of Israel's most recognized analysts and correspondents discussed the political developments in the past week, influences public discourse in the country more than any other. Incidentally, Netanyahu was groomed while he was stationed in Washington, D.C. in the 80s. Yes, he was. If Netanyahu was watching the program last Friday, he probably didn't enjoy it. The main issue being discussed in the studio was Netanyahu's surprising decision announced 2 days earlier to fire his defense minister, former IDF General Moshe Yaalon, and replace him with one of his fiercest political rivals, Avigdor Lieberman. Now, Avigdor Lieberman came out of the Soviet Union some time ago. Yeah. He was also a big Menachem Killer Begin supporter. The six-member panel, sitting around a table, mostly discussing the political aspects of Netanyahu's moves, some said it was yet another display of his political genius. A year after Lieberman refused to enter Netanyahu's coalition, forcing the prime minister to rely on a narrow and shaky majority of only 61 members of the Knesset out of a total of 120 in the Israeli parliament, Netanyahu had finally convinced the leader of this Russian immigrant, Yisrael Vetnu party, to put the past behind in return for the second most influential post in the Israeli government. Others argued that the move had backfired after Yaalon, who learned about his humiliating dismissal through reports in the press, refused to accept Netanyahu's condolence offer to become foreign minister and instead went on the attack, announcing his resignation from the government. The tall and bald-headed defense minister delivered a scathing attack on Netanyahu, warning that extremists and dangerous elements had taken over Israel and the Likud movement. This is no longer Menachem Begin's Likud, the Likud I joined. These elements are threatening our house and everyone inside it. Sounds like Netanyahu's in trouble. As the other journalists in the studio were talking politics, Channel 2's veteran military correspondent, Ronnie Daniels, suddenly asked his colleagues to keep quiet a minute because he had something important to say. Daniel, a retired lieutenant colonel in the IDF, has been a regular presence in every Israeli living room for more than 2 decades. Unlike most senior journalists in Israel who are considered liberal and left-leaning, he has long been a hero of the center-right. Segments featuring him yelling at pro-Palestinian activists and Arab members of the Knesset have caught fire on a social media. Soldiers at the military bases he visits line up to take selfies with him. And last year, he received a glowing interview in the right-wing newspaper Mekor Rishon, owned by Sheldon Adelson, of Las Vegas. How about that? Which complimented him for his patriotic tone of coverage during the last Gaza war and highlighted his attacks on the leftish thought police junta controlled by the Israeli media. That's why Daniel asked to say a few words about Yaalon's ousting. Nobody expected what was about to come. Not his colleagues in the studio, not the viewers at home, and certainly not the prime minister, if indeed he was watching. Quote, "I'm not a young man anymore," unquote, Daniel, 67, said in an angry tone. Quote, "I grew up in the kibbutz near the Jordanian border. I plowed the fields. I was told to go to the army. I went to the army. They told me I needed to become an officer. I became an officer. Reserve duty. They told me you need to become a battalion commander, so I became a battalion commander. I fought in all the wars, and after this week, I feel for the first time in my life I'm not sure I want my kids to stay here. Probably ship them to the United States. I'm not sure that's what I want." When another reporter tried to ridicule his statement, Daniel banged his fist on the table and yelled, quote, "I'm speaking from the bottom of my little Jewish heart here." It was an extraordinary emotional moment. Even in an age of Fox dramatic reality television, if there is an equivalent to the 2016 Israeli to Lyndon Johnson's comment about losing Middle America as a result of losing Walter Cronkite on Vietnam, losing Daniel was probably it. Netanyahu has been despised by large segments of the Israeli media for his entire career. You see any of this in the U.S. papers? I don't. And he has found it to be a blessing. During the last elections, attacks on him by some papers became so grotesque that even when accurate, damaging stories about him were published, many voters refused to believe them. But Ronnie Daniel is a different case. He's never attacked a prime minister like this before, and in fact was one asked more than once by Netanyahu to become his official spokesman. Now the prime minister, political maneuver, which put Lieberman in Yalon's chair, had caused the gruff popular analyst to publicly say he feared for the country's future. Wow. The source of Daniel's anger wasn't just the fact that Yalon, a decorated former general, lost the defense ministry to Lieberman, who had served only 1 year in a non-combat role in the IDF. What enraged Daniel was that the notion that Israel's holiest of holies, national defense, military-industrial complex, had become a political bargaining chip. Israelis are used to political tricks of all sorts, but the defense portfolio is considered to be, to many, sacrosanct. Whoever sits in that ministry is responsible for the lives of Israel's sons and daughters, and the only criteria for this position, ideally, should be a professional qualifications required to help best protect the country, not the prime minister's political interests. Wow. Anyhow, they went on here, and there was some place where there was a real outburst, and saying that Netanyahu was destroying the country, we got to get rid of him. Well, maybe when Obama-Scama leaves office, that'd be about the time for Netanyahu to leave office. Then they both can get together and write a book, The Negro and the Kike Memoirs. You should read some of this Israeli stuff because, well, talk about fighting and quarreling among themselves. Nobody does a better job of it than the Jews. Well, a while back, B.B. King died, a blues singer. Remember him? He was 89 years old. The year since then has been decidedly less peaceful. While neither of King's two marriages resulted in children, he managed to leave behind a vast family of 15 kids and 15 women. If that family history weren't complex enough, King's authorized biographer, Charles Sawyer, wrote in his book, The Arrival of B.B. King, that doctors found the musician's sperm count too low to conceive children. In 2015, Sawyer told The Guardian that he had given King the option to remove the reference and that King declined. Either way, King claimed 15 kids as his own, never disputing his paternity. And of the 11 who survived, many are now fighting with King's appointed trustee over his estate. Yeah. A fortune that family members tell THR could be worth at least $30 million and $40 million when royalties assessed sales and rights to be taken into account. Many of the kids point to a 2007 will and trust that they claim grant them generous allowances, but King's longtime business manager, Laverne Towney, who's now legal trustee of the King estate, asserts that she merely is following a 2014 trust which names the children but doesn't provide for them with specific monetary gifts. Get out of here, tar baby. According to the trustee's own legal filings in Nevada, King's estate also is far smaller than the children allege. $5 million and change spread across a few Wells Fargo bank's accounts. But the kids have assembled teams of lawyers to fight the estate's guardians. The litigation could continue for years. While the value of King's estate is the subject of great contention, observers say it's hardly is a case like Michael Jackson's estate, which has gone up in value roughly $1 billion since the enigmatic singer's death. In King's case, he wrote few of his hits, sold records for decades to a segregated America, and made deals at the time which black artists were hardly paid handsomely, according to analysis conducted for this story by Billboard. King published and recording assets, including his catalog, are valued roughly at $7 million to $8 million based on the Nielsen Music data and consultation with a financial executive who buys publishing master recording catalog. So there you go. B.B. King had 15 kids, man. 15 different mothers. How about that? Since his death, three more people have surfaced claiming King was their father, too. Quote, "My dad told us, even when I'm gone, I'm going to take care of you," unquote. "But we haven't received a dime since he died," says Riley B. King, B.B.'s son, 67. Quote, "We got a lawyer and we're going to try to fight and get what belongs to us, men." Well, we're getting fatter and fatter. However, the big negative is that the rate of obesity in the United States is continuing its upward march. And boy, I'll tell you, I saw it the other day at this place we went to. Oh, jeez. They rented out all the little electric carts for these big, fat, giant people. And they're going to have to get some more of those electric carts. The electric carts, were so many of them, they were bumping into each other. 30.4% of Americans 20 and older said they were obese, up from 29.9% in 2014. I don't know how they get much fatter. We had one on our bus. Boy, must take three toilets to fit her. Although the 2015 rate is not significantly higher than the previous years, it represents a continuation of a trend that's been going on since at least 1997, when researchers began using the current survey and when only 19.4% of Americans said they were obese. That's not a good trend here, Ward said, but it is not necessarily anything we didn't expect. Wow. Let's see here. Oh, black Americans report higher obesity rates. Boy, I've seen some big ones. Other surveys say the problem is even worse. In 2012, the National Health and Nutrition Survey found 34.9% of adults 20 and older were obese. For that survey, CDC researchers measured the weight and height of more than 9,000 Americans to calculate their BMI, or body mass index. Adults with a BMI of 30 or higher are considered obese, whereas those between 25 and 29 are overweight. The approach probably gives a more accurate picture of obesity in the United States because the people tend to overestimate their height, driving down their BMI in self-reports, said Michael W. Long, assistant professor at the Millikan Institute School of Public Health at George Washington University. Still, the National Health Interview Survey is one of the most important ongoing surveys, said Long, who has not involved in the new research. It can give an idea of how much obesity has increased over the years because of the amount of participants misestimating their height and weight is probably pretty constant, he said. Wow. Let's see. CDC researchers found that the rate of obesity were higher among blacks than mestizos and white adults. 45% of black women. Whoa, wait a minute here. I got a problem. All right. Yeah, here. Let's see here. 45% of untouchable women reported that they were obese compared to 32.6% of the mestizo women and 27.2% of white women. Similarly, 35.1% of black men said they were obese compared with 32% and 30.2% of mestizo and white men, respectively. adults between the ages of 40 and 59 bore the highest burden of obesity. In this age group, 34.6% of the people said they were obese, compared with 26.5% of adults 20 to 39 years old and 30.1% of adults 60 and older. Well, I don't know what to tell you, man. I don't know what to tell you. It's getting pretty bad out there. Anytime you're in a crowd, you'll see it. Total hippopotamuses walking around, walling around, legs as big around as their waist should be. This epidemic's going to catch up with us. I think it's already caught up with us. It's going to be bad. But that's it for today, boys and girls. I'll be back tomorrow on Freya's Day, Ladies' Day in the bunker, She-Wolf Day in the bunker, and I think I'm going to put you into meditation tomorrow. I think I got a meditation program I'm going to want you people to take it so you can calm down, react, and not be so hateful and all that kind of stuff. So I'll let you know about that tomorrow. 14-5.